also have a special guest with us today, and she is a well-known author, keynote speaker, and so much more, and her name is Joan Borojenko. How many of you know of Joan? Okay, so I'm going to read to you a very short bio. You want to know more about Joan, go to her website. But Joan is a PhD, Harvard-trained cell biologist, a licensed psychologist, and a spiritual educator. She's a pioneer in mind-body medicine and psychoneuroimmunology. Did I say that right? That's a word like this long. Close enough. She's president of the Mind Body Health Sciences, LLC, and a New York Times bestseller author of 17 books. 17 books. She's a distinguished pioneer in integrative medicine and a world-renowned expert in the mind-body connection. Her work has been foundational in international healthcare revolution that recognizes the role of meaning and of the spiritual dimensions of life as an integral part of health and healing. I met Joan at the Big Sky Retreat, probably in 2018, maybe that was the year, and found out from Karen Drucker that Joan lives in town. So I made the call or an email, and voila, Spirit said yes. So we are so excited to have you here. Thank you, and Gordon, her beloved partner. So thank you both for joining us today.
I have to say, it feels like coming home. One of my best friends in this whole world is Karen Drucker. And hearing her music as we came in is wonderful. And hearing you two, how wonderful to have such great musicians with such great heart. Absolutely fantastic, because I think music is one of those things that a disease like cancer and not be able to afford to come for treatment, or if you're the family, to be with the person. That's something, it's a little thing in our own corner of the world that's a big thing that we can help with. And I really, Rev Liz, I just love the love and action of this church, to sit there and see, now I'm going to cry, to see all the good community things that you're doing is great. And I am celebrating this community and congregation. You are so fortunate to be here in Santa Fe, to have Rev Liz. My God, she's fantastic. And real, and that's it. If we can all be real with one another, these are difficult times. We all know this, and we don't have to enumerate the variety of difficulties facing us. But in terms of resilience, more than anything else, we need the shelter of one another. And I want to tell a little story and then a few little practical tips and a poem. When you spoke, Bob, I thought about what it was like when my father got cancer. I was at that time, I don't know, I must have been around 30. I was an assistant professor of cell biology at Tufts Medical School, and my field was cancer research. And it was a field that really excited me because I love science. I love all of the molecular ways that actually, to me, are divinity. To see, oh my God, how beautifully the human body is crafted. How remarkable the energy and the levels of symmetry and harmony that create the physical part of our existence, the emotional part of our existence. So I was happily doing that, and then my dad got cancer. And long, very long and sad story, kind of short, he was given a drug that made him mentally ill. It created a manic psychosis. And it was as if a stranger had moved into his body, because he had such a flight of ideas that he would just kind of babble on, and there was no capacity for him to listen. There was no presence. All of that was gone. And back then, let's see, this, my goodness, this would have been, you know, maybe 1975 or six, long time ago. There was no help in within hospital systems for people having mental health problems or just having trouble dealing with a very, very hard time. No help for the families and no help for the people. And what happened to my father was he had to have surgery. And so they took him off the drug that was creating the mental problems. And it was amazing. Within like days, there he was. He was back again. I always like to think of it as somebody who was lost in a shipwreck and floated in on a raft a year later, and there they were. And there was such joy. And there was a sense of connection. Now, he was in Florida, I was in Boston. There's sort of an unwritten rule amongst the Boston Jewish community, and that is, when you get old, you have to move to Miami. So, that he did. And he called, and he'd, pardon me, he'd had his surgery, and there was the most deep connection, heart to heart. There he was, and there was that sense of presence that transcends time and space. Those moments, I think you've all had moments like that, a holy moment with someone else. The next morning at 6 o'clock, I got a call. He had waited for my mother to fall asleep, and then he had jumped out the window of their 30th or so floor condominium. And that, what can I say? We all look back at our life at times that were pivotal for us. And they're very often hard times, very difficult times. And I said to myself in that, I can't be in the laboratory behind a microscope anymore. I need to understand better what people with cancer are going through and what their families are going through. And I just felt, you know, ever feel a calling? You just know you got to do something, even though you do not know how. You have a powerful dream. And there is no immediate course to manifest that dream. And I said to myself, or I heard that inner voice that calls us, that says, you have got to help other people in this situation. And I went to the chairman of my department and I said, I need to change my fields. And he said, but you're about to go up for tenure, and you're going to have it. You're going to get tenure. Why would you leave now? And I said, I have to leave. I have had a call. And then the path opened in front of me. I had done research earlier in my life with a physician whose name was Herbert Benson. And he was really the first person to introduce meditation into medicine, and to begin to explore the physiology of how meditation changes us. How when we can turn down that inner voice that always is reading us the riot act, you're not good enough, the world is coming to an end, there's no hope for this relationship, whatever the riot act is that we're fixated on, that of course, we can give into that. Or we can realize, oh my God, all these tensions of life, if we work with them, if we just stay present to them, and if we feel the dream of something we can do to help in our heart, they just become guideposts for empowerment, that all the difficulties in life are there to strengthen us in some way. And these are hard lessons. It's difficult. So I want to say that whatever honorarium I was going to get from this workshop, I'm going to donate, Bob, to and that's what we can do when the going gets tough. We can support one another. We can help one another and live in the shelter of one another. Another just couple of things that come to mind to say is that we all go through times of endings and beginnings in our life, and we all go through hard times. I look back now at my father's death. It was an ending and a very difficult one, but it was also a beginning. I can't speak for the other members of my family and what beginnings came to them, but for me, I wouldn't be standing here now had that really difficult circumstance not happened. And what happens when, you know, when the world seems to be coming to an end, as it certainly often does. Who gets stuck in worrying like, oh my God, they, you know, it's the end of planet Earth? Anyone ever have that thought? As things are not going well. This is the fact. But the fact also, I always say to myself, you never know. There are black swans, unexpected events. And so many times in history, just as things seemed at the brink, something comes along and there is a new beginning. Those new beginnings are always possible for us as individuals, for us as families, for us as communities, and for us as a nation and as a world. And so that hope is there. And for me, I also take comfort in Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey, because there, what he said is there are always times of separation. And the hero, which is us, which is all of us, we're on this journey together. In times of separation, the world falls apart. Everything is fractured. It's the end of whatever it was that helped us hold things together. And then, you know, the actuality, I'll add, of the fact that we never had much control anyhow comes to us. And the first and most important response to that is to simply surrender to the fact that it's a time of grieving. Because if we don't let ourselves grieve, we can't progress on the journey. And so for those of you who are feeling grief personally or because of what's happening in the world, for any reason, we let ourselves grieve and moment by moment make our way through that into the stage of the hero's journey that's called the liminal state, that time between no longer and not yet, when the old world has disappeared, but the new one has not yet appeared. And we're all together now. We're in liminal space. We're in the unknown. And we're really not taught, I think, as kids in this culture, coping strategies for dealing with the unknown. What we tend to be taught is how to retreat into previous beliefs and the most contracted vision of ourselves when we don't have to think outside the box. So this is a time in liminal space to allow ourselves not to know, not to have to know, and to wait in our hearts to see what emerges next, and simply to take what for us is the next right step from where we stand, from what we can see. And that's not such an easy thing, but that's the spiritual journey. That's what we're here to do, to say, okay, for me, I'm not in control of the whole show, but I'm in control of my attention. I can be mindful, I can notice what's happening, and I can take whatever the little step is into that opening with a sense of faith. And the sense of faith, of course, is something good is there. The journey is real. There is, everything is divine. It is all there. And I think also in this liminal state, we have to have a sense of humor, don't you? Without that, we need the shelter of each other. We need to laugh. We need to be able to admit our mistakes. And we need to allow ourselves to be ourselves. So I'm almost at the end because I'm looking at the time here. But I have something that's been very helpful to me through liminal time. And basically, you know, if you look at your life, you're always in liminal time. You, in some parts of your life, will always be reaching the third phase of the hero's journey, which is the return transformed. And that's wonderful. And we have to dwell on those times too, the times when, my God, I've had a transformation. I felt a deep spiritual sense of belonging and connectedness, because in other parts of your life, oh my God, the journey is separation again, liminality again. All of this is happening all the time for all of us. And so someone once told me about a teaching. Actually, I originally heard this from Cynthia Bourgeau. You know Cynthia's work? She's remarkable. She's been working a lot in the last years with Richard Rohr, right in Albuquerque. But she's a wonderful spiritual teacher. And somebody had told her, we all, at times, are our most contracted, fearful self. Face it, it's not going to go away. You know? We all know that place. And at other times, we are like our most expansive, open, connecting self. So I sort of see that in my mind as aligned from zero contracted to 100% present, open. And I'll often just notice my state without saying, you should be in a better state. What's wrong with you? It's like all this spiritual practice for nothing? You've written 17 books and you're feeling like this, you jerk? So we've all been there. So instead of that, I've decided it's better to say, I am right now experiencing contraction. I'm like at 12%. This is not good. I'm stuck in judgment, but it's not bad either. It's just what is. And if I can allow myself to feel what I'm feeling and realize these feelings, like everything else, will also pass. All things come, all things pass. All things are impermanent, but love always remains. So I want to end my talk with a poem that I totally love. It's quite a rascally poem. It's going to seem kind of harsh in the beginning, but don't worry, it opens out. It's by Ellen Bass. It's called Relax. And I first saw it several years ago in Spirituality and Health magazine. There was a column, Poem of the Month. So here it is. Relax. Bad things are going to happen. Your tomatoes will grow a fungus, and your cat will get run over. Someone will leave the bag with the ice cream melting in the car and throw your blue cashmere sweater in the dryer. Your husband will sleep with a girl your daughter's age, her breasts spilling out of her blouse. Or your wife will remember she's a lesbian and and leave you for the women next door. The other cat, the one you never really liked, will contract a disease that requires you to pry open its feverish mouth every 4 hours. Your parents will die. No matter how many vitamins you take, how much Pilates, you will lose your keys, your hair, and your memory. If your daughter doesn't plug her heart into every live socket she passes, you'll come home to find that your son has emptied the refrigerator, dragged it to the curb, and called the used appliance store for a pickup. Drug money. There's a Buddhist story of a woman chased by a tiger. When she comes to a cliff, she sees a sturdy vine and climbs halfway down. But there's also a tiger below and two mice, one white, one black, scurry out and begin to gnaw at the vine. At this point, she notices a wild strawberry growing from a crevice. She looks up, she looks down at the mice. Then she eats the strawberry. So here's the view, the breeze, the pulse in your throat. Your wallet will be stolen. You'll get fat, slip on the bathroom tiles of a foreign hotel and crack your hip. You'll be lonely. Oh, taste. How sweet and tart the red juice is, how the tiny seeds crunch between your teeth. Thank you. I'll see you around town. Now you know me. If you see me at the grocery store, come say hello.